Six had no idea what that meant, but it was making her nervous. For a variety of reasons. She forced herself not to think about it as she made the trek to Stellan's house, and then she had to force herself to buck up when she saw the Toyota Camry in the drive as she headed toward the four-car garage where she now parked her baby. She suspected that Camry belonged to Margarita. And she suspected it had not been lost on Margarita that someone was sleeping with Stellan in his bed, considering the fact the half of his closet that hadn't been filled was now full of leather and designer fabulousness, and his clothes hamper had women's panties in it, as well as other things. She parked in the garage next to Stellan's Maserati. When did something like that become part of her life? Took a breath, grabbed her work bag, her camera, and pulled herself out. She was wearing a pair of loose-fitting black leather short shorts and an oversized dark gray tank that dipped so low in the front it nearly showed cleavage. These with a pair of simple black T-strap sandals. And for the first time in her life, she wondered what someone would think of her outfit. This did not count Stellan. She always wondered what he thought of what she wore, at the club, in a playroom, and especially recently. Then again recently, she was in no doubt. He could express a good deal of appreciation just using his eyes. She hit the button to close up the garage and entered the house through the door that led to a laundry room that would bring many women to tears. The area offered so much counter space, cabinetry, and mounted drying racks that even Six got excited when she saw it, and laundry was never exciting. She came into the back hall that led to Stellan's home office, which was nicer than her boss's office and bigger than her entire apartment. Then again, nearly every room in Stellan's house was bigger than her apartment. There was a powder room on the lower level that wasn't, but that was it. A library, a game room, and the door to what was very unusual for any home to have in Phoenix, a basement. Along with a home theater, yep, he had a four-seat home freaking theater, a walk-in wine cellar and a lot of storage, Stellan's vast playroom was down there. She hit the kitchen with some trepidation, because she knew Margarita made the bed every day, dealt with the laundry, and tidied up breakfast dishes as well as kept the entire place spotless, so there was a possibility she could be anywhere, including the kitchen. And Stellan respected and adored her. And thus, Six felt the bizarre need for Margarita at least to respect and like Six. She wasn't even letting herself think about meeting Stellan's assistant, Susan, and her husband, Harry. The only good first impression she'd ever cared she'd make was getting the man behind the money who was hiring her for a job to do just that. She'd never had to make people like her. She didn't know how to do it. And Margarita was a Mexican-American grandmother who had the opportunity to see Six's entire collection of leather, knew she'd moved in and was sleeping out of wedlock with Margarita's employer. Though, Stellan shared, he kept the playroom under lock and key, and Margarita did not have that particular key. She didn't think that was a good first impression already.
"Six!"
Margarita exclaimed when she saw her. "Hey there, Margarita," Six replied with a nervous, forced smile, seeing Stellan's kitchen counters were littered with burlap grocery bags in various stages of unpacking.
"I just got back from the grocery,"
Margarita declared unnecessarily. Six dropped her camera and work bag on the counter. "Yes, I see." Margarita grabbed a package of strawberries and a bag of Bing cherries and headed to the fridge.
"Stellan said you're in all weekend, so I got you covered."
"That's cool," Six replied, trying to read anything on her that might be negative, but all she seemed was to be happily buzzing along in her duties. "Can I help?"
she asked. Nope. I mean, if you want.
Margarita came out of the fridge and shot her a smile. But you don't have to. Her eyes fell on Six's expensive camera and came back to Six.
Are you a photographer?
She shook her head. Investigator. Margarita's eyes got so big that they made Six give her a genuine smile.
Like a detective?
Sort of. I'm the in-house investigator for a law firm. If they have a case that needs someone to do some digging, I do that digging.
Interesting,
Margarita said, like she found it just that and then some. Six's lips quirked.
It actually is.
Margarita's face suddenly fell as her gaze went back to the camera.
Do you,
she turned her eyes again to Six,
have to take pictures of unsavory things?
She nodded. It's a bummer, but yes, sometimes. I can't share what I got snaps of today, it's all confidential. But at least today's work wasn't icky. Margarita started chuckling, loading her arms with tortilla chips, boxes of crackers, and a bottle of fat olives before heading to the pantry, muttering,
Icky.
If you're down with putting all this away, I need to send these snaps into the office. But seriously, if you need help, I'm in, and the snaps can wait. Six called after her when Margarita disappeared into the large walk-in pantry, lined with shelves and cabinets with countertops that she kept stocked with pretty much everything.
I'm down with doing this, Margarita called back. I won't be long, and then I'll be out of your hair.
You're not in my hair, Six started with a loud voice, but ended it normal when Margarita came back. And, how did one do something like this? If you, well... Margarita stopped moving and looked to Six after pulling two bottles of Hendrix out of a burlap bag. Two bottles. Guess she didn't want them running out. Or Six was enjoying too many of Stellan's excellent mixology skills.
If I what? Margarita prompted.
Need me to, you know, do anything? To make things easier on you? What with me being here with Stellan now and... She interrupted.
It's my job to make things easier on you.
It's that for Stellan, but...
No, Six. I take care of Stellan and this household. In other words, I take care of anything important to Stellan that revolves around this household. And since you are here, and you would not be if you weren't important to Stellan, I take care of you too.
That was sweet. But I can make the bed in the morning. Six offered. And he told me you, well, get on him about it so I can make sure Stellan hits the laundry hamper, which I noticed he's not wont to do. Or even get close. The man dropped his clothes where they hit and that was that, even if it was rooms away. She didn't get all she said out before Margarita shouted with laughter. Six didn't know what made her laugh so hard. So she just stood there, smiling that confused smile people who weren't in on the joke smiled, waiting to be let in on the joke.
Querida,
Margarita began after she quit yucking it up.
The only thing I beg you to do is not take care of the things I do for Stellan and you. What excuse would I have to keep an eye on him? If you made the bed and got him to hit the laundry hamper, which could grow to you doing his laundry and then the shopping, and then where would he be? Considering the state of the individual who calls herself his mother, someone has to...
She trailed off when she took in the look that hit Six's face. The state of the individual who calls herself his mother? When Six had done her deep dive, she'd seen pictures of Brigitte Lang. Older ones where she was startlingly beautiful, and hanging on the arm of the then-handsome Andreas Lang,
the heir to a hotel empire and the beauty who'd caught his eye. She'd also seen pictures that were not recent, but were more recent than those. Pictures of a woman still retaining her beauty, even if it looked like a veil that did not conceal the haggard wasteland of the grief of a woman who'd lost her young daughter to suicide. She hadn't dug deeper than that into Brigetta. It was enough to know what befell Celie Lang and the public disintegration of any kind of relationship Andreas had with his son after they lost Celie, and it came to light precisely why. "He hasn't spoken of her," Margarita noted in a horrified whisper. "We're still getting to know each other," Six replied. Saw the expression on Margarita's face and quickly assured. "There's much that's difficult for both of us to share. We're..." "It's too much, Margarita. We're parceling it out. But he will tell me. He's honest about everything. So you shouldn't worry you broke a confidence. It's just that we've known each other for years, but what we have is relatively new, and we haven't gotten around to certain details." Margarita was nodding repeatedly, but Six could still see she was shaken. "I'm glad he has you," Six said quietly, and Margarita's troubled gaze came to her. "I won't make the bed, and I'll let him drop his clothes to the floor. So he'll be sure to keep you. But honestly, I hope you know he'd do that anyway. Even if he had to unmake a bed I made so he'd have the excuse." Margarita's head tipped to the side. "Did you ever expect to have a woman thanking you for not making your bed?" she asked unsteadily, trying to inject humor into what had become heavy. "No. Then again, I never expected to live in a house where someone comes in every day to make the bed. So lately, my life has been full of surprises." Margarita gave her a tremulous smile. Six's return smile was steady.
"If there's anything you'd like. I know what Stellan likes, and he has Susan call with any additions, but if there are things you want to have around, or things you like to cook..." Margarita offered. "I hate to give you a poor impression of me, but I never learned to cook, because I never had the desire to learn. And thankfully, God offered frozen dinners and microwaves and fast food, so I don't go hungry." Margarita looked alarmed, until Six finished what she was saying. "But the only thing I want around is Stellan. And since he lives here, does the cooking, and likes doing that, I'm good."
"Can I admit something to you?" Margarita asked abruptly.
"I'm feeling like breaking open the gin, getting us both sloshed, but before that, texting Stellan to warn him, he's going to have to drive you home. So since we're here, we might as well go for it."
"If I were to have guessed who he'd pick, it would not be a woman like you."
"Damn." Six fought stepping away or even turning away to hide how deep that stung.
"But after I saw you, I thought about it. And now that I know more about you, I think you're perfect," Margarita went on. "He is nowhere near your average man. So why on earth would he choose an average woman?"
"Why on earth would he choose an average woman? Margarita," Six whispered, not knowing what to say, not even knowing how she was feeling. "Just that it was good." The woman nodded smartly.
"She'd need to be unique, individual, a force onto herself and him, exciting and daring and beyond the pale. Someone who has an interesting job and wears leather shorts in Phoenix in the summertime, looking like a Hollywood starlet."
She kept firm hold on Six's gaze.
"And someone who would also offer to make the bed to make things easier on me.
When I saw your car, I was worried coming in here,
Six admitted. When Stellan talks about you, I can tell how much he cares about you, and I really wanted you to like me.
Well then, mission accomplished, Six,
Margarita replied, back to her bright smile. Simone, Six blurted. Margarita appeared confused.
I'm sorry?
I mean, I'm known by everyone as Six. Except Stellan. I'm Simone to him. That is, I'm Simone. That's my name. But, saving her, Margarita said firmly,
Simone.
Six cleared her throat, then asked, Do you drink gin?
I drink wine, and I drink tequila, and I have a husband who will come and get me if I drink too much of either. So, you send your pictures, and I'll finish up here, and we'll share a drink. And if that becomes two, I'll call Ernesto, and all will be well.
Six grinned at her.
Cool.
Be back in a bit.
See you in a bit.
Six grabbed her work bag and camera and headed for Stellan's office, pulling her phone out as she went. She sat at his desk and texted, I invited Margarita to stay for a drink when she's done doing her thing. Cool? She powered up and was loading the pictures on her laptop when his reply came back.
Cool. X.
Stellan was not a verbose texter. He got the job done, and that was it. But that was his thing. X. Sometimes that would be his only reply. X. Sending her a kiss. So Six thought he really didn't need to say much else. That was all she needed.
I'm not sure how Ernesto feels about my girlfriend liquoring up his wife.
Six was sitting at Stellan's island, watching him cut up cucumbers that he was apparently going to throw into a salad made of corn he'd grilled on his restaurant-quality stove. Chickpeas, mint, oil, lime juice, and obviously, cucumbers.
I'll admit, things got out of hand,
she mumbled into her muddled gin. She took a sip, swallowed, and finished. But only because she's a lightweight. Stellan shot a megawatt smile at her. He had amazing teeth. And he'd called her his girlfriend. Did men like Stellan Lang have girlfriends? It was he who called it. So she guessed they did. And that was her. Seriously. How was this happening? When he tossed the cucumber in, mixed it all up, put it in the fridge, and went back to the tuna steaks, she tried to sound casual as she noted. You've mentioned your dad, but you never speak of your mom. He didn't look up from whatever he was doing to the tuna as he murmured,
Ah, so M has a big mouth when she sips tequila.
He didn't appear tense or pissed or hesitant, so Six kept at it. But she did it, covering for Margarita. She let something slip, freaked, I moved her past it, but she didn't really say anything. He stopped with the tuna, put the heels of his palms to the counter, and looked to her.
What did she say?
She just mentioned her.
How?
Six lowered her voice and replied, If you don't want to talk about this, Stellan, that's totally all right.
She's a bitter alcoholic who's managed to burn through the enormous settlement she obtained from my father, the healthy additions I've given her in the interim, and, regularly, prior to the end of the month, the monthly alimony she still receives, thus prompting my healthy additions. She's the reason his prenups are extreme. He's still supporting her and her excruciatingly slow commission of suicide, but this isn't why he chafes against it. He simply wishes she'd fade from memory. He's not a fan of being confronted with his failures, since he vastly prefers kidding himself that he doesn't have any.
Baby, Six whispered.
I understand her bitterness, he carried on, seemingly effortlessly. I even understand her addiction.
She adored my father. In early years, I remember us all being very happy. However, I think she got a wrinkle and his love for her died. She was completely unprepared. She thought she'd live the fairy tale forever. And she couldn't ever imagine how that nightmare would turn into something darker than anyone could believe.
I shouldn't have brought it up, Six stated quickly when he paused in speaking.
Why not? Stellan asked. We're getting to know each other. This is part of my life. A part of my life that you'll discover. And with something like that, you should be prepared.
So, maybe, she tried, but he kept going.
She lives in a beautiful home outside Sedona. She meditates and wears clothes that appear to be crafted solely out of scarves. She has Tibetan prayer bells installed in her garden. And she drinks 3 bottles of wine a night and can lapse into rages about a marriage that ended 30 years ago. Like she just discovered her husband was unfaithful the moment before. She comes down too often and stays with me. When she does, she sits cross-legged by the pool on a Buddhist rug to balance her chi. Later, I'll have to assist her to bed because if I don't, I'm not certain she'll make it to her room without injury. She's delighted I have not married or even become serious with a woman. Because she's convinced I'll destroy their life like my father did before me. And if you told her she thought that, she would be stunned and affronted. However, halfway into bottle of wine number 2, she would not be able to stop running her mouth about that very thing.
When he stopped speaking, without anything else to say, Six said, I'm so sorry.
I am too.
He agreed.
I remember her as beautiful and full of life, in love with her husband, and she adored her children, besotted with us. It was unfortunate the bitterness settled in with permanency quickly, so even Celie lived it. Obviously, I cannot know what was happening in my sister's head when she made the decision she made, and obviously I've thought of it often since she made it. But I think it was not simply due to the fact she'd been raped by what amounted to a member of our family. It was that after she was, with her mother that bitter, already twisted, completely self-involved, and so far down the path to alcoholism, there was no turning back. Celie had no one to turn to.
Except you,
Six whispered. He nodded once. Except me. And your 16-year-old brother is not the confidant needed to deal with something that hideously ugly. I did my best, but it was never going to be good enough. In that moment, Six was unfairly and irrationally angry at Celie Lang. Because she hated that Stellan ever thought he wouldn't be good enough at anything.
Really, I'm so, so sorry I made you speak of these things, baby, she said gently. And when she did, he pinned her with his blue stare and returned.
I speak openly of them, Simone. I do not bury it. I do not hide it. I do not ever attempt to convince myself that it did not affect me, alter me. And those for the worse. I miss my sister. I mourn the life she could have had. I miss the mother and father I knew when I was young. Because they've both died as sure as Celie is gone. It's a fact of my life. It is part of what's made me. I don't turn away from it. I face it. I do that even if there's no lesson to learn from it. No desperate silver lining to try to wrench from it. Every human being on this earth experiences heinous things. Some less extreme. Some so extreme, they're unimaginable. If there's a meaning to this life, that's it. You find a way to deal, or you die. whether by making yourself stop breathing or living a life not worth living.
Six looked to her glass before she took a healthy sip.
That's not an indictment, darling, he said softly.
She turned her gaze to the pool.
Some of us do the best we can do, he continued.
She cut her eyes to him and looked him up and down, from lean waist to fabulous head of thick, beautiful hair, in his stunning kitchen in his Venetian mansion.
And some of us do better, she returned. I found my sister dead in a garage. That marked me. I have a weak father and an equally weak mother, and that marked me too. I did not watch my parents get murdered, and do it miraculously surviving a bloodbath. After what you've endured, the fact that you're not a junkie or a prostitute or a drug dealer, or anything but the magnificent creature you formed yourself into being, is frankly no less than a miracle.
Okay. She hated she put him through that.
But now she really wished she hadn't brought it up.
Are you going to cook that tuna, or...
she began. You couldn't have saved them,
he stated. I know that, she snapped.
I'm not talking about your parents.
Six actually felt her face pale.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
God. He knew everything. She threw back the rest of her drink.
They made their choices.
Stellan kept after her. She glared at him.
You are not responsible for those choices, he declared.
They were my friends, she clipped. He raised his brows.
Did you inject them with your uncle's heroin?
Now we need to stop talking about this, she bit out.
No, we don't, he returned smoothly.
I'm sorry I mentioned your mother. I'm sorry it brought up your father and your sister. But in this getting-to-know-you thing we have going on, I'm not ready for this.
Will you ever be?
He asked. Absolutely not, she stated clearly.
Then now's as good a time as any,
he fired back. Right then. Did Dillinger tell you their parents didn't let me go to their funerals? She queried.
No, but I'm not surprised. They needed someone to blame. So they blamed a 17-year-old girl who had nothing to do with it.
He was my uncle, Stellan. Abruptly his face got hard, and he leaned toward her, grinding out.
Simone, you weren't even fucking there.
He was known as a charmer. He was good-looking.
He'd had two counts of statutory rape dropped on him, according to conjecture by the police, because he'd bought off the parents. He was known to party with young girls, give them drugs, get them hooked as clients and available bodies. Your two friends had been there repeatedly without you being there, before he fed them tainted heroin. Repeatedly. Other kids at your school said they were your friends for the sole purpose of spending time with him, to get access to his drugs and his attentions. Did you know that when it happened?
She shook her head. Of course not.
You just had friends over from school, like any girl does, not having any clue they were using you.
I should have known.
How?
Because that was my life, Stellan. And it might have been all I knew, but I still knew it was wrong. I just had to pretend. I had to pretend I could be normal and do normal things.
And that's wrong?
He pushed. I should have protected them, she snapped loudly.
You were no more than a child. It wasn't your job.
I was their friend. So yes, maybe they were using me, but I didn't know that. And it doesn't matter. I thought I was their friend. So you are 100% wrong. It was my job.
I understand you think that, Simone, but how could you do that
when you weren't even there.
She looked away.
Look at me,
he ordered. Fuck you, she spat. Darling, look at me, he called gently. She looked at him and yelled, fuck you.
Come here,
he murmured. She put her glass down and slid off her stool, sneering at him. No, you can't be sweet Stellan now. Hold up the mirror and show me how it really is, then pull it away and try to weave your spell to make me think it looks different. It's never different, Stellan. Never. And this shit, she twirled her hand in the air, it's done. I'm going to take a ride. I'll come back and get my stuff sometime over the weekend. She started to walk away, but of course she didn't get very far. Stellan barred her path. She stopped and looked up at him, her voice vibrating its warning. I will seriously land you on your ass if you don't get out of my way.
You promised not to leave, no matter the reason,
he replied. Tricky bastard. With that talk about his family, she'd fallen right into his hands. She'd even brought it up. Apparently I lied, she retorted. She went to sidestep him, and he moved in front of her. Her eyes caught his. She smiled without humor and noted, last warning, baby.
If you leave me, all will be lost, he declared.
No shit, she asked.
There isn't another for me.
Oh, there is, handsome, she stated snidely. Just open up your wallet or waltz into the honey, and they'll be lining up. He lifted his brows again.
Is that what you want from me?
No. The thought of Stellan having someone who wasn't unique, individual, exciting, daring, a force onto him? No. She didn't want that. It killed her to even think about that. But she was done with this. Get out of my way, she hissed.
No.
Stellan, she growled.
If you're correct and you can land me on my ass, that would sting my pride. If you walked out on me, I survived my parents, my sister, killing herself. But honest to Christ, Simone, in just 1 week of having you by my side, I have real fear that would destroy me.
Six went solid, and Stellan went in for the kill.
You make me laugh, honey. Even Susan, who was dead set to think you were taking me for a ride, or at the very least would put me through the emotional ringer, got over it when she saw I'd found someone who made me happy. It had not occurred to me in my life of plenty that I was missing anything, but I've learned I was. I started this in an attempt to make you happy. What I'm discovering is that it's happening the other way around.
His beloved assistant saw it. She saw that Six was making him happy. She was making him happy. Six looked at his throat. She looked at the buttons of the shirt on his broad chest. She looked over his shoulder. She made a decision. Then she looked to him. I can't talk about that anymore, she whispered.
We'll leave it for now,
he whispered back. Still whispering, she said. I want this. I want us.
I know you do.
You're going to have to be patient with me. I'm not used to anyone giving a shit.
It breaks me, but I know that too.
I also don't have anyone, she swallowed. I don't have anyone who's glad I found someone that makes me happy.
You do.
Just you.
That's not true. There are many of them, Simone. You just haven't noticed, and you also haven't let them in.
She couldn't do that now, either. I watched my mother. His normally silken voice sounded hoarse in beautiful and terrible ways when he cut her off.
I know.
It was my father who got in front of me.
Stop it for now, and please come here.
Six went there. Stellan folded her in his arms. She wrapped hers around him and pressed deep. He held her tight.
You're going to have to give me time, she said.
All right, darling.
After dinner, I'm going to need...
Take your sketch pads wherever you wish. I'll be somewhere else, and you can come to me when you're ready.
She closed her eyes tight. And he thought she deserved him? How could that be?
I'm sorry, she murmured.
Don't be,
he said into the top of her hair. So, yes, she cleared her throat.
There we go. We're both royally fucked up.
Royally,
he agreed.
You might be gorgeous and rich and able to cook and have a way with hiring household staff that are awesome, because Margarita is just awesome, but when she's tipsy, she's hilarious awesome. But in the royally fucked up stakes, I totally beat you.
His body moved with silent laughter. It was the best feeling in the world. She tipped her head back, and when she did, she found him looking down at her.
Just amazing. Are you going to feed me?
She prompted.
Whatever you need.
That was Stellan.
Whatever she needed. Six got up on her toes and pressed her lips to his. He bent into her, taking her back to the soles of her feet, and took the kiss deep. When he'd used his mouth to fill her up with all things Stellan Lang, he led her back to the kitchen, made her another drink, and finished cooking their meal. After they ate, she took her sketch pads to the library and saved the day on paper in ways she could never have done in real life. When she was ready, she found Stellan, and he was right where she needed him to be.
10. Pondering.
6. Six woke up the next morning to find she was alone in bed. She sat up, looked around the room, and saw she was just plain alone. This was a surprise. She and Stellan had had a heavy night the night before, but they'd ended it together. That day heralded them adding a new level to their relationship, and she thought Stellan would want to start that right off the bat. And she had to admit, she wanted him to start it right off the bat. She was nervous. Her, Six, frigging nervous. But she was also curious. In that sexually stirred up in a good way kind of way. She threw the covers off, pulled herself out of bed, and padded through one of the archways to Stellan's luxurious master bath. He had chandeliers and columns in there, too. Not to mention a flat screen mounted on the wall. She stopped when, on the vanity by the sink she used, she saw the glossy cream box with the frosty blue satin bow. This was sitting on top of what looked like the white linen shirt Stellan had worn at the pool party last weekend. And both of those were beside a full mug of coffee that was resting on one of those individual coffee warmers. She moved toward it and saw there was a thick stock note card sitting on it, embossed at the top with Stellan Petter Lang. Of course, the man didn't just dash something off on a scratch pad. Always class with Stellan. She smiled before she even picked the thing up. Written on it, it said,
S. Come down wearing this, darling. I want you adorably fuckable.
S.
Well, that explained him not being in the bedroom.
Six felt butterflies hit her stomach. Actual butterflies. And they got worse when she opened the box to find an extraordinary set of pale yellow lace underwear. The lace was divine. The demi-cup bra, exquisite. The panties, a wide strip of lace across the hips, with just a narrow gusset between the legs. And they were the perfect size. She figured adorably fuckable meant he wanted her prettied up in the way six could get prettied up, and good to go for the day. Therefore, she took a shower, gave herself a close shave, lotioned up, did a light makeup thing and a full hair thing, all of this while sipping coffee. She donned the underwear that even felt like sheer decadence, shrugged on the shirt, and took her empty coffee mug down with her. She saw Stellan was out on the patio, back to the doors, eyes to the pool, cell to his ear. The heat had finally hit, and Phoenix was experiencing upper 90s, low 100s days, but that wasn't the reason Stellan was out there with his broad shoulders bare. She saw his legs covered in a pair of the loose-fitting knit masculine lounge pants he wore when he was working a sub. That was, he wore them when he was wearing anything. It was either those pants or, when play had reached a certain point, nude. She knew what those pants meant, considering he slept naked. A tremor shivering up her inner thigh, she set down her mug in the kitchen and moved out the door to the patio. The instant he heard her approach, he turned and looked over his shoulder at her. And the instant he did that, it took everything she had not to stop dead, in order to put everything she had into memorizing that moment right there. Mostly, Stellan, wearing her favorite look, at his home, relaxed in his element, surrounded by all he'd wrought. His hair, not styled to project the man he was out in the world, his suits in his closet. No, right there with his dark hair falling on his forehead, messy from sleep and making love before he did that. Face relaxed, dark blue eyes soft and content and admiring and pointed toward her. He could give her diamonds and pearls and entire islands, but the best gift she'd ever receive was him sitting there looking at her just like that. He tipped up his chin, indicating he wanted her to come to him. But she was already going to him. She would have gone to him if getting there meant going to the ends of the earth, and she had to do it slaying dragons and battling trolls. And when she arrived at his side, he kept his head back, his eyes falling to her mouth, telling her what else he wanted. But Six would have dropped to touch her lips to his, even if she knew, prior to doing it, it would be the last thing she'd do in her life. This is love, she thought, feeling his soft lips light against hers and adoring the feel. I'm in love. When she moved an inch away, thrown by her realization, she stopped only because he'd caught her at the back of the neck. Up close, Six looked in his eyes and realized that was the last thing she wanted to see before she took her final breath. Stellan looking at her, completely content because he woke up in a home where she would wake up and find him. One moment, he said into his cell. Then immediately to her, not covering up his phone, not giving that first shit whoever was on the other line heard him. He said, good morning, darling. Morning, baby, she whispered, her voice throaty with the realization that had just dawned. But as thick as her throat was, for once in her life, her mind was crystal clear. He pulled her to him to brush her lips against his again, before he let her go and indicated with a tip of his head the chair he wanted her to sit in. Six moved there, lowering herself in the patio chair Stellan had angled, facing his. After she sat, he bent forward and did it deep, sweeping her feet up into his lap by hooking his forearm around her ankles. He then sat back, resumed his conversation, and did it one-handed, massaging her foot. I'd wanted it taken care of yesterday. It wasn't, he said into the phone. And we'll discuss how I feel about that on Monday. For now, you've taken enough of my weekend. My woman is awake. We're done talking. He paused, listened briefly, then said, Monday. And that was obviously that, because he pressed his thumb on the screen, tossed the phone on the table, and looked at Six.
"Sleep well?"
he asked. She nodded. He engaged his other hand to massage her foot.
"Heaven. My woman is awake. We're done talking."
Lord, she'd fallen in love with him. Not from afar love that was mostly deep abiding fascination, but in the end really just a crush. No, it was real life. Sitting opposite him with your feet in his lap, wearing beautiful underwear he bought you after a night where you had an ugly emotional row, while discussing viciously painful parts of your past. But you ended it cuddling, then making love, then sleeping in each other's arms, only to wake up to a foot rub. Love.
"You all right?"
he asked.
Was she? Was she all right?
Was she like he'd looked when he'd peered over his shoulder at her? Content, relaxed, quietly, happy. Or was that crystal clear of her mind a tactic to hold at bay other thoughts that wanted to crowd in? Terrifying thoughts. Thoughts about how perfect this moment was. How it and the last week and even how Stellan had ended their discussion last night had been everything any girl could ever want. But she was not that girl who got what she wanted. She was that girl who'd been born to nothing and worked her way to having a bunch of leather and designer gear. One and a half, as she counted Carlo, true friends. And a lot more of nothing.
"Simone,"
he prompted.
"I'm good,"
she replied, swallowing instead of clearing her throat when it came out husky. He gave her a gorgeous, understanding smile, and she wondered what he understood, and was worried about it, as he moved his hands to her other foot.
"Not after last night,"
he declared. "Pardon?" she asked, for her part, totally not understanding.
"We're not playing,"
he explained.
"Not after last night. We need some time to just be. Be with each other, clear our heads, let that go. If you like, we can have a session tomorrow, but now, no."
Yes. God, yes. She was in love with him. She needed to clear her head. She'd never really done it, but it sounded heavenly to just be. That said, what was with the underwear? "So the yellow lace is a non-starter?" she asked. He shook his head.
"I did buy it for you to wear while I played with you, but now it's just a gift. Though I put it out, as I did, to see how you'd respond. And considering it was sort of a test, I'm pleased to note that you passed."
Deciding for now just to live in the moment, this glorious moment, Six kicked playfully at his hands, doing it so he wouldn't stop because she never wanted him to stop, as she shot him a fake annoyed look that totally didn't work since she was also grinning. He grinned back, dug his fingers in at the arch of her foot. She bit back a moan, and he asked,
"Do you want more coffee?"
She focused her gaze on him, and she was no longer grinning.
"If you want to play, baby, I want to play," she said quietly.
That was awarded with a sexy flash in his eyes, but he shook his head again.
"I love that, sweetheart," he replied in her same tone. "And if you're there, I'm thrilled. We'll have our session tomorrow. But this morning, I'll get you some coffee and bring out some breakfast. We can then go to a movie or go downstairs and spend all day watching them here. I have an extensive library. Or it's set up to get anything online we might want to see. Or we can go to the botanical gardens, or instead, to Papago and walk the loop. We can also just put on our suits, get our books, and have a lazy day by the pool. Your choice." Her choice. Even when she was wearing underwear he'd told her to put on, or he was ordering for her at a restaurant, it was her choice. She had a feeling if she lived the dream of a life where he was in it for decades,
In one way or another, everything would be her choice. Which would be his choice. Okay, yes. Her mind was no longer crystal clear. She was terrified. She was also 6. And Simone might fall apart. She wouldn't know. She'd never allowed Simone to handle anything too intense, or anything at all. But 6? Now 6 could handle anything. At least until it was time to bail. However that bailing needed to be to protect herself, protect Simone. Or, in this case, to protect Stellan. In the meantime, he had to know. And before she chickened out, she had to tell him. "You make me happy, too," she blurted. His fingers dug in at the ball of her foot. "You should know that," she said when he said nothing. "And the biggest part of that is knowing that I give it to you." His dark look and the dark words that came after did beautiful things to her. "Get up, bend over the table, lift my shirt to your waist and pull your panties down to your thighs." She was frozen in the beauty. "I thought we weren't playing," she whispered. "We're not," he replied smoothly. "We're fucking, or I'm fucking you. Now do as you're told, Simone." She did as she was told. Wet and ready for him before he moved in behind her, placed a hand firm on the small of her back, the other curled around her hip, and drove his cock inside. Instantly, she was lost in him. Happily lost, being filled with him, connected to him, one with him. And that didn't change when he started thrusting and ordered, "You don't come. You're bent over and on offer for me, darling. If you earn it, I'll let you come tomorrow." God, beauty. "This isn't playing?" she asked, her voice wispy. "You'll understand the difference," he answered, pounding in, stayed in, ground in, waited for her moan and finished. "Tomorrow." 6 said no more. She let him use her. She got off on letting him use her. She thrilled at beating back her own response while listening to him build his. Holding steady, pulsing tight around him to give him more, listening to his soft sigh but feeling his thrusts intensify as he came inside her, and glorying in the invasive caress that was him slipping in and out as he came down. He slid all the way in and bent over her to say softly, "Breakfast? Then movies here. You get one pick, I get one pick. And we'll agree on a pick. Then we'll have a nice dinner out here by the pool." That sounded like the perfect day. She started counting. Now she was at 7 perfect days. 7. The first 7 of her imperfect life. "Works for me," she murmured. Eyes closed, feeling his breath at her neck, his chest warm against her back, his cock still buried deep, not caring even a little that her clit was buzzing, her nipples tingling, her thighs quivering with the aftermath of holding back an orgasm, because she'd given him his. And honest to God, that was all she needed. 6 moved down the hallway toward Stellan's office. It was later. After their movie spree in his at-home theater, after they'd gorged on snack food and she'd made him watch Man on Fire, he'd made her watch No Country for Old Men, and thus, feeling in a Coen brothers mood, they'd ended it watching Fargo. After that, they'd trudged back up for Stellan to start dinner, only to get interrupted by a phone call. "I really can't ignore it, sweetheart. Back in a bit." He'd then taken off, leaving things happening in the kitchen. And since 6 knew nothing about what happened in the kitchen, she went off to find him to ask about what she should do with the stuff he left happening in the kitchen. She didn't think he'd mind if she interrupted him. She was getting the feeling he wouldn't mind anything when it came to her. But she didn't make it to his office, because he was in the library. 6 was still in the yellow underwear and his shirt. He was still only wearing his lounge pants. That day was a day of togetherness and decadence. And she was wearing makeup, but other than that, for both of them, the day had been all about the chill. Until she saw him standing in the library, his tan muscled back to her, the span of those broad shoulders, his amazing ass encased in those beautifully fitting lounge pants, one arm up and cocked, hand holding the phone to his ear, head turned, looking down, one arm out, finger touching the cover of her sketchpad. Six stopped moving. She also stopped breathing. That sketchpad was 1 of 12. The other 11 were filled from cover to cover with all the foul shit she'd seen, she'd done, she'd heard bragged about, she'd heard whispered about. From when she was a little girl and her first living memory was watching her mother stitch up a gunshot graze on her father's thigh in their tiny kitchen, a wound he got for reasons she was too young to ever know, to various incarnations of her saving that little girl, doing all the things she had to do to keep her safe and protected and innocent and loved. Six was the one who'd seen all those things, not Simone. Six was the one who'd done all those things so Simone wouldn't have to. Heard the things, lived the things. Every adventure left a scar on Six that would never heal. All over fictional Six's body. Her back, chest, legs, arms, face. There were scars. Fictional Six in her sketch pads was a walking, healed wound. A miracle of a still existing, still ready for the fight hero. Even after what she'd endured, determined to keep going because if she didn't, Simone would have to face those realities. And standing in the hall, having padded there unnoticed on bare feet, she saw in his profile precisely how badly Stellan wanted to open that sketchbook. Open the cover that opened the window to her psyche, exposing everything. Exposing the entirety of the mess he'd taken on. Exposing the wounds that were inflicted deep down inside that could never heal. She almost cried out, screamed, stomped in, and demanded to know what the fuck he was doing. She didn't, because Stellan skated his fingers across the cover of the pad, then turned away, moving to the window, speaking in low tones on his phone. Stopping to look out at his fabulous landscaping. It was then she knew. It was then she knew that, of course, he wouldn't. Of course Stellan wouldn't break her trust like that, trespass in places he knew she didn't want him to be, betray her in a manner he knew she couldn't forgive. Of course not. He'd wait. Wait for her to offer it to him. Wait for it, like it was a gift he lived to receive. Six sucked in breath and forced herself to walk on unsteady legs to the kitchen. She turned everything off. If it was ruined, it was ruined. Stellan would start again without getting upset, or he'd go out and get them something. With her, he was that even-keeled. A ruined dinner he'd spent time preparing was nothing. Six, thinking she had anything to do with her friend's dying at her uncle's hand. Now that was worth getting pissed and in her face about. She walked out to the patio, went to the remote that controlled practically everything, including the pool light and the water feature. She turned both on, then went to a lounge, curled in it, legs tucked tight to her chest, arms wrapped around them. And watched the halogen pool light lazily navigate a variety of different colors. Purple, blue, green, red. Purple, blue, green, red. Simone. She didn't jump, even if she hadn't noticed him joining her. She just tipped her head back and looked up at him. I didn't know what to do, and I didn't want to disturb you on your call. So I just turned everything off, she told him. It's pasta, it's fine. If it's ruined, I'll cook more, he replied impatiently. Then got to what he wanted to talk about, she knew, with the intense look he had focused on her face. Are you all right. She was not. She wanted to show him. She wanted to be brave enough to take him to her sketch pads and hand them over.